Yes, because this is how we are programmed to function and see life. We know that in order to do something, we need someone else to come and teach us. Since we are very little, we get programmed in all aspects of our lives. And this is the map that we have in terms of understanding the world. So there's always, the solution is always somewhere else. We are not taught when we are very little that we have everything we need inside of us. We can connect with all resources and all the knowledge in the universe.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. Hello and welcome to the program. I have a bit of a gravelly voice as I am getting over a cold. My guest today is Nicoleta Porojanu. She was born in communist Romania in the 1970s, a culture very different from my understanding. The communist system had parents working 7 days a week with children looked after by relatives. Her first 7 years were idyllic, living with her grandparents. Her grandfather was a wise man, a war veteran, and her grandmother was a natural healer for the village. It was a peaceful and stable childhood. At 8 years old, she returned to her parents and they moved to the city so that she could go to school. It was a very difficult time for Nicoleta. Getting used to a new family environment and living with a father who was alcoholic and potentially violent. Her escape from life was reading. And perhaps it was these early experiences that led her to select her future career in psychotherapy. She followed the path as required in the culture, going to university and studying. She got married and had children. And despite family suggestions that she should work in tourism, she continued her studies, qualifying as a clinical psychologist, and she went to work in a palliative care unit. At the age of 30, caring for the dying was challenging, but she discovered so much about humanity. In our conversation, we explore how she reconciled the pain and sadness of these people in her care and the associated feelings within herself. It led her to start training in psychotherapy. She moved to London to embrace diversity and expand her knowledge. She ended up working in the mental health service and community care for over 15 years. During that time, she developed a private therapy practice and continued her studies and practitioner research in self-healing. Like all journeys, there has to be a shock. 5 years ago, she was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, a very rare form. Having lost her mother to the disease a few years previous, she was pretty much gave up on her own life and decided to surrender to the outcome. We explore how she came through the fear, how it was her family that pushed her to find a reason to want to live. After 6 months of chemo and two operations, she is fully recovered. It was that journey that led her to discover so much about herself and being human, and it opened the doors and to insights about her work that she never would have discovered without that journey. My conversation with Nicoleta touches on some of the fundamental aspects of my work on this podcast journey. We discuss fear, we look at thoughts and feelings and how her 7 steps for transformation can move us to find a better future. Now in remission for 5 years, Nicoleta has guided countless people in transition from life crisis to happiness and fulfillment. She's working on her first book and is a host of the Open to Happiness podcast. She is also the founder of the Significant You mental health charity. I hope you get as much value out of this conversation as I did. I am delighted, as always, to be talking to a new guest today. I am talking to Nicoleta Porojanu. Thank you for taking some time to be with me on Life, Passion and Business today.
Hello, Paul. Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here in this space with you.
So this is Life, Passion and Business, and we're all about the journey that we all take in life and how that unfolds for us. So where did your journey begin?
Well, my journey started in Romania, where I was born in a small city, in a family of five with three children. I spent my first 7 years of life with my grandparents. That was the culture surrounding us at the beginning of 70s, when parents used to work in our communist times 7 days a week.
Wow.
Most children were in the care, of their grandparents. So I spent my 7 years of life, my first ones, with my grandparents, which was a bliss in a way, because they were fantastic people. They were mature enough to have the patience with me and my brother, my one year old brother. And I grew up surrounded by a very wise grandfather who was a war prisoner in Ukraine towards the end of the Second World War, and has been through a fantastic journey in life, as well as my very mystical grandmother, who was the healer in the village. And it was a beautiful environment. People would come over. There was that sense of connection and belonging to a group of people that cared deeply about each other and helped each other.
So
it was a wonderful beginning in life.
So it's interesting, because it's like, in the 70s in the UK, it was quite modernized. But in Romania, I'm guessing it probably wasn't quite so, because of under communist culture.
No, it wasn't. It was, a very humble existence, let's put it this way, as far as I remember it.
And so when you say your grandmother was the healer, I guess that kind of approach would have been very necessary, because it was other medicine available, but it's just not used?
Of course, there was medicine available, in the West.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much access as probably people would have in the West, because everything was based on a prescription, so you would have to go to the doctor, and the system was highly centralized, so it was kept on the radar. But the healing that my grandmother used to offer to people was very close to what we call alternative medicine today. It was not based on the conventional medicine. It was based on listening to people, on being there for them when they had something to offload, on creating all sorts of natural potions of plants and oils and stuff like that, and massaging people, on their feet when they were hurting, on their backs. And it was that natural release of oxytocin that comes with that human connection that would actually provide the healing. But I feel that it was a healing in a way on all levels towards the wholeness of the person, because it wasn't just the human physical connection that was helping the physical body. It was also that kind of communication. So on a mental level, people were very connected, and as well on a spiritual level, because they had faith. They relied on each other. They were part of something bigger, beyond
I'm guessing you put this together later, because you probably wouldn't have been aware of that when you were that age.
No, at that age, what I understood was that people are good. People can trust each other, people can help each other. So that was the beginning. It was the foundation of my life. All the values that I've had from them have probably led me in life to where I am today, and kept me sane and safe despite all of my challenges. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was a good start in life for me. Those 7 years, I still have wonderful memories surrounding those initial years.
So where did it lead from there? I mean, what happened next?
Well, when I reached the school age, naturally my parents took me and my brother to the city. So we went to school there, and our lives have changed, because I lived in a quite unpredictable environment with an alcoholic father, which wasn't nice at all. There was domestic abuse and all sorts of things going on. I started actually feeling like I am aware of myself. I had my first spiritual awakening, if I look back now and I think about it, when I was eight. As soon as I moved down with them, I realized that there is something different in what I see here in this family of mine, comparing to the parents I used to have, because with my grandparents, there was peace and tranquility and joy and appreciation for life. Whilst with my parents, there was no stability. I never knew if he's coming back home drunk or, you know, sober, if it's going to be quietness or, you know, conflict. And that makes you wonder. I was observing the neighbors surrounding me, you know, and I realized that these people are different. So I was very curious since I was 8. I thought there is something about this. And by 10, I already knew that I wanted to study psychology, which was forbidden in Romania. It was hidden beyond psychology, you know, beyond sociology, sorry. Mm. It was, you know, it was hidden beyond sociology. You couldn't call yourself a psychologist. You would study the science, but it was beyond the covers of a sociology book. And people were doing the work, but in a way, quite careful to not be spotted. And I knew by 10, 11, that this is my path in life. So I continued to look around and, you know, become aware of what's going on, struggle with life like any child, you know, grow and develop. I immersed myself into reading. That was, in a way, the escape I had on those times. From everything that was going on around. And gradually I actually got married first, had my son who's now 32 and qualified in different other things, accountancy, hospitality. I tried different things because people were saying to me, you know, by the time I got married, you must be crazy to go into that world. Why would you surround yourself by people in suffering? I mean, why don't you go, you know, for something, you know, happier, like hospitality? People come on holidays and they just want to have fun. And I found it quite interesting. So I allowed myself to be, you know, easily influenced by others.
Was that still in Romania or had you moved?
Yes, it was still in Romania. I actually qualified as a clinical psychologist back home. And I worked there in a palliative care hospital with people that were dying. That was the most challenging experience of my life. Mm. Up to that date, I was 30 at the time. It was very hard to see all my patients dying, you know, day after day. And me being the one that probably had been closer to their heart towards those last hours of their lives. There was a lot of regret and dissatisfaction, all sorts of conflicts, unresolved conflicts with their relationships, with their families.
You were quite young. You were quite young for that. How did you hold that at that age?
Oh, my God. That was interesting. It was hard, but I think I've been given this gift of being with people and being able to hold onto emotions, onto the pressure that comes with that inner turmoil that people carry with them. It was very hard. I had sleepless nights for about a year until I got myself used to the letting go, because I was very much invested in their life stories. I felt I was so young and idealistic, and I just thought that I can actually do something about it.
There's two ways. Now, from my perspective, there's two ways that you deal with this. One is you harden your heart and then you don't allow it to affect you. And the other way is you somehow develop an openness. Which direction did you take?
Well, I think you're very, very, very right. There was a sense of openness to life in terms of the desire to understand what's going on a bit deeper than take it on a surface level. Oh, people are dying. That's the nature of life. So I wanted to understand a bit more. And then gradually I've learned that there's no way to cope with this if I don't accept it. Mm-hmm. Because if it stayed with me over and over again, and I just cling onto every single patient, I'm not going to be able to move to the next one. I'm not going to be able to take care of my life, take care of my family. So the understanding and the acceptance settled in gradually within the first 3 to 6 months. And then I struggled a lot to let go, to just surrender to what is and let it be in the past, in the yesterday. So it happened, it's in the yesterday. And I think the most difficult part was the fourth step when I realized that there is learning in that. I can integrate this experience and make it very valuable for me and my life. And I can take it with me in my profession, in my life, in my social life as well. So I can inspire people, so I can draw some meaning from it, because I don't think these experiences, all of these events have come on my path just like that, random. I started to not believe in randomness anymore. And I looked for meaning, and I in a way I integrated really nicely everything that happened to me, all my ancestry, whatever I found out about my ancestors and my first experience in life, you know, the first 7 years in life, which are shaping us, and then what happened with my family. And here I am, you know, holding this space with a person that is in such vulnerability. And what am I doing with it? I can't just fall into that. I can't bring them into my world. So we need to find a way of being together. So I created a space of containment where people felt very safe to talk to me, very safe to be themselves, their real selves in that presence of mine, and very willing to feel raw and vulnerable and just connect with what was there that wasn't touched. Sadly, right now towards the end of their life. So in this space, I've learned a lot to understand, to accept, to let go, surrender, and to integrate that meaning and learning. And that helped me a lot on a personal, social, professional level, because it led me to forgiveness. I could forgive my family, my ancestors, the world, everything that was going on around. And that was the beginning of the healing. So as I grew myself as a professional, as a human being, I was more able to actually hold that space and initiate or facilitate, I would say, that healing that was happening in the other person, in this intimate space that we shared. And it was just beautiful, absolutely fantastic for me.
Mm. So how long did you stay working in this palliative care environment?
Well, it's actually ended only about 4 years ago after my breast cancer journey, because I moved from Romania. I started training in psychotherapy immediately after the palliative care years, because I realized that there is more than the medical model. You can't just sit there with someone that is in deep distress and is about to end their lives and think of the clinical stuff, you know, doing tests, evaluations, and doing your paperwork. That wasn't the space for me. So I started training in psychotherapy straight away, and I carried on training. But there was a point when I felt that everything seems to be repeating. There's kind of the same problems, relationship struggles. People were feeling lost. You know, they have so many regrets. There was no sense of finding out what's actually going on. And I thought, in a way, this is connected to my culture, so it must be, you know, a cultural thing. And then I decided to move to London. I wanted a different kind of experience. I wanted to embrace the diversity. I wanted to be able to work with, you know, with people that come from different ethnicities, different races.
Yeah.
And that was the most extraordinary platform that I've ever had in terms of meeting new people, understanding more about what's going on with us. And I ended up studying more and more and working in the health and care, in mental health, in managing mental health services, basically in London, in domiciliary care, in community care, as well as residential.
Did you answer that question? Because you said you wondered if the palliative care questions at your patients was a cultural thing in Romania.
Yes.
Did you discover the same thing when you came to London?
Yes. After three more postgraduate courses in psychotherapy and counseling, I've realized that, doing my own dissertations and my own practitioner research as well, I've realized that we are more similar than different. And the culture is just slightly creating a little bit of a difference in our lives. But essentially, we are all human beings and we share the same ancestry. We're coming from the same kind of narrow space into expanding right now and growing as population and, as, you know, in awareness as well, in development, in science. But essentially, we experience life the same. It's all about the continuum of experience between good and bad, you know, beautiful and ugly, and so on. We like this duality. We like this sort of thinking. And we, throughout life, I feel that in a way, we kind of go through the same challenges. So sooner or later, we are hit with with the same challenges, and we need to face them. So that was one of the greatest learnings.
Wow. So you came to London, and did you say you had breast cancer in London, or was it?
Yes, I worked in London for 15 years in mental health, as I mentioned, alongside my private practice as a therapist. I continue to study. I continue to run my practitioner research work to develop new tools to help people get to know themselves, to discover themselves, to heal and to grow. And at some point, I got ill myself. That was about 5 years ago. I will soon celebrate the 5 years of a new life, I would say it. Yes, I had a very rare form of breast cancer. It's called triple negative breast cancer. It's a very, very aggressive form. Grade 3, it's called, which means that the cells are reproducing really, really rapidly. So the risk of spread is very, very high. And it has quite a bad prognosis in terms of survival. I was lucky that being in touch with myself, with my physical body, as well as my mind, because I was obviously a lab myself, researching myself a lot as part of these discoveries. And probably at the first sign, checking my breast like any human being, like any woman regularly, I realized that there is a little bit of stabbing at some point in one of my breasts. And I kept, an eye on it. And very soon, probably in a couple of weeks' time, I could feel a very small lump. So a very small lump of 2 centimeters can actually turn your life upside down. Sure. Because when it's cancer, well, it's the C word. It brings fear. It brings a lot of scarcity and worries. And it was a very difficult time. I had to go through 6 months of chemotherapy. This cancer only responds to chemotherapy. I knew that if this is not working, I may have probably 1, max 2 years of life. So I've reorganized my life completely. And I permitted myself to work more from where I feel I fit into this profession rather than following everyone else. So I could create my own style of work, my own therapeutic modality, the expansive psychotherapy, which expands on the old psychology and psychotherapy schools of thought to consider anthropology and epigenetics and quantum physics and logotherapy and transpersonal psychology. And
wow, that's a long list.
And the Eastern traditions as well, because we can't actually do psychotherapy on the mind as we've been doing, indoctrinated by this science for the past hundred of years. The therapy, psychotherapia in Latin and Greece, means the healing of the soul. So we need to integrate the body, mind, and soul in our healing. And when we do therapy, we need to heal, you know, in our wholeness, everywhere, not just in the mind, because it's not working. This is what I've learned. So gradually, after 6 months of chemotherapy and a couple of major surgeries, I was cured and I could carry on living my life. And I've expanded my being into living, actually giving myself permission to live the life I want to live, not the life that I had on my agenda in the past, which has been very much determined and conditioned by the world surrounding me. So that was a moment of personal freedom and liberation that I haven't experienced before. It was another sort of milestone in my personal development, I would say. And that was absolutely fantastic because it changed the way I am and I look at life. Sorry. It changed the way I function. It changed the way I relate to myself, to my family, to the other people, to the world. It helped me grow as a professional as well, develop more tools that have been so life-changing and transformational in my clients' lives. So there was a lot of wisdom coming out of this last spiritual awakening, which was the hardest hit I've had in life on a personal level, I would say.
How did you address the fear? How did you work with that and stick and you know, and come through that?
This is a wonderful question. Because very often in our modern world, what we do, we try to be of help to others when they go through illness and challenges. And we just try to encourage them. It's all about positive psychology in the past decades. Oh, just be positive. Oh, think of the positive. Well, the positive psychology is great, but it's not the whole story. It's just part of it. You can't be deluded and deny the existence, deny the reality that is unfolding in front of your eyes. So you need to be, in a way, you need to be a realist. I was gutted by fear. And I was probably... so lost in fear because a few years back, my mother died in my own arms of cancer. So for me, cancer was, the equivalent of death. There was no way of thinking that I would survive cancer. So I had this false belief, that if I get cancer, I'm going to die just like my mother. So the beginning for me was horrendous. I couldn't function. I gave up kind of everything. I didn't even want to have treatment. It was my family that came over and said, come on, if you don't fight for yourself, just do it for us. We want you. We need you. We appreciate you. We celebrate you. Just be with us, Find the reason. Find a bit of a meaning to fight for this. So there was a stage of denial. There was a stage of rejection, and of immersion in the fear. And in a way, I'm that type of person that really wants to feel the aliveness. So I give myself to the experience fully, the best I can on each moment. I'm not that type that lives on the surface and pretends things are fine. Oh, don't worry, things will resolve by themselves. Or I just stay a distance from emotion and feeling. I just immerse myself. I like to consume the emotion, whatever it is, positive or negative. I think it needs to be consumed rather than keeping it trapped within ourselves, because this is what's making us feel. So I had this great, ability, maybe coming from my grandmother, who was very authentic, who was very honest, and very, very present to everything that was going on around her. So I was initiated in that. I had that luck, so I could maybe stay with the fear and learn from it. So I had a lot of self-reflection. I sat with myself a lot and ask myself, what's going on? What is this about? Who am I? What am I doing? And most of my, I would say, most significant existential questions happen to arise at that point. And they are part of my work now, because I've noticed that they seem to be coming back in everyone's lives. Where am I coming from? How did I get here? Who made me who I am? Who's the real me? And what's my purpose in this world? Why am I here? There must be a reason for this journey. And where am I going from here? It's very, very important to really take the time and reflect on this. And I managed to actually not get out of the fear, because I don't think you can strip yourself from your emotions. I think you need to transcend them. You need to understand them. Go through the 7 steps of transformation, like with everything in my life and work. Understand them, accept them, let them be as they are, learn something from them, integrate them in your life, then forgive everything that needs to be forgiven, then naturally heal, because that's the way of healing. Whilst you're having those emotions, whilst you're going through that experience, you can still heal. If you go through these stages, and this is when you transform. And I think the transformation allows you to actually transcend what's happening, move past it, somehow go through it without moving it outside of you or keeping it inside of you. It's just a beautiful way of allowing the energy to flow. Mm-hmm. And when you see yourself at the other end and you look back, you feel resilient. You feel like you could embrace that endurance so you can actually go through anything that might be, that life might throw at you in the future. And it's changing you. That's the real transformation that happens.
For the sake of my listeners, can you give us somewhere where we would find the 7 steps? Because that sounds like quite a valuable tool.
Yes, you can find them on the homepage of my website, actually, at nicolettaporojanu.com. Oh, okay.
And the 7 steps of acceptance? What are they?
No, they are the 7 steps of transformation. It's all the learning that I captured in my life, personal life, social life, professional life. Mm-hmm. What I've saw that people need to really transform their lives. Because very often we think that we can actually change easily. oh, do this and you change. Do this and you lose weight. Do this and you get rid of your addiction. Do that and you transform this. Create this habit and your life will change overnight. The reality is that all miracles seem to be taken 3 days, let's say mostly 3 weeks, because we have that 21 days of rewiring in terms of our neural pathways. So miracles don't last that much. We need more than saying, I'm going to change. Habits need a lot of time and nurturing to actually replace the old ways. So I realized that change is not sustainable. And I researched for this so much in my own life, in the lives of all my, hundreds of thousands of clients that I worked with and patients and people that I had in my care, and I managed through all my placements and all the places I've been. And it was very interesting that the story seemed to be repeating. So I put everything down on a piece of paper and I started writing just to capture this intelligence, what's coming with this, what is this knowledge about? And I realized that there are 7 steps that are absolutely necessary for the transformation to take place and stay. So in every aspect of our life, whatever we want to do, we will need to go through all of these 7 steps, whether it's a change that we want to make on a level in our life, either physical, mental, or spiritual, or in our relationships, in our 4 relationship circles that we have with ourselves, family, other people in the world, changes in the way we see the world, in our mindset. And that goes to the 3 entangled minds, which people used to know as conscious, subconscious, and unconscious. I feel that they are not that, because there are many levels to the consciousness. So you can't just move from the conscious to the unconscious. And it's a different way of understanding how we function on a mental level. Mm. So we need these 7 steps to really initiate a change in our lives and sustain it. And they are understanding of what's going on, whatever that is, accepting what is and what was as part of the past that shaped us in a way.
Yeah.
And it's happening. It's unfolding right now. The 3rd step is letting go. It's about leaving that experience to be in the past without carrying it with you in this present moment, always in your rumination, in your thinking, in everything that's going on around you. And that's a sense of surrender in a way. You let go, you accept that has happened and it has to stay there. You can still revisit it, you can still think of it, you can still have that memory, but you don't have to allow it to feel raw in you. You don't have to carry that emotional charge that comes with it. And the 4th step, which I think very important, is the integration. And this is about learning. What do you learn from that experience? What did that bring into your life? There must be some meaning to it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have happened. I'm a strong believer that everything that comes on our path, it has a meaning. It's there for a purpose. And the 5th step, because when you understand, accept, let go in the past and integrate that learning, then it's kind of easy to function from a place of forgiveness. Yeah, you kind of forgive the people that have wronged you. You forgive yourself for maybe wronging others. You make amends. You let it go. It's a sense of flow and inner peace. It's the beginning of tranquility that, we are searching for. It's that border where you step into more personal freedom, where you free yourself in a way from that past that was overwhelming you. And that forgiveness in the 5th space allows you to heal. And the 6th the 6th step is actually the healing. You're starting to heal your physical body, your mental space, your soul, your spiritual being. And when you heal in your wholeness, something beautiful happens. This is when you transform, because you don't transform just because you say, I'm going to transform right now. You've been through a journey which is transforming you from the inside out, not changing from the outside because you're following other people's ideas and you think this is the way, this is what you need to do. And this is why most people still lose themselves into suffering, into loneliness, into the feelings of inadequacy and insufficiency, and they lead to depression, to anxiety, to addiction, to PTSD, because there's a lot of trauma in our lives. And this is why people are unhappy. And I think mental health should be looked at beyond the medical model, as I started to see it, to integrate all of these aspects of life that I mentioned before, like anthropology, epigenetics, and quantum physics, and the Eastern spiritual traditions, and the transpersonal psychology, because it's you know, there's more in this universe that the eye can see.
Yes.
And I think for our healing, for our mental health, we all need to make a little bit more than accepting to go to a counselor. We need to get ourselves involved in that, you know, consistent process of personal
development. I guess that idea of going to a counselor or going to someone is exactly the same as anything else. It's like taking the car into the garage to get it tuned up, isn't it? People have this idea that it's going to happen outside of them.
Yes, because this is how we are programmed to function and see life. We know that in order to do something, we need someone else to come and teach us. Since we are very little, we get programmed in all aspects of our lives. And this is the map that we have in terms of understanding the world. So there's always, the solution is always somewhere else. We are not taught when we are very little that we have everything we need inside of us. We can connect with all resources and all the knowledge in the universe. Well, in that consciousness.
It's interesting because no one taught us to walk. We have to teach ourselves to walk.
Well, I think we have the knowing inside of us.
No, precisely. That's what I mean. You know, no one taught, everyone encouraged us to walk, but no one actually said, this is how you walk. You actually started to stand up and work it out for yourself.
Absolutely. It's the same with breathing.
Yeah.
In the very first moment when you are born, you're breathing naturally. It's in you already. You have that knowing. No one is telling you in this very moment, you inhale and now you need to exhale. And look, our autonomic nervous system is taking care of us. You know, it's making sure that we function well. You don't tell yourself, move your left leg and your right leg, or move your head now, or open your mouth and articulate a sound. It just comes naturally because that knowing is already in every single one of us. We have everything we need to heal ourselves, to create the lives we want. You know, we have absolutely everything. It's in there. We just need to connect with those resources.
It is fascinating what you can teach yourself, though. It's like I had heard that you can learn to perceive your own heartbeat. You can actually just close your eyes and perceive it. And I didn't.
Yes.
And now I do it all the time. I because I'm a runner, so I'm conscious of my heart rate as I'm running. And it's like, if you say, how would you know? And I couldn't tell you what it is, but I can tell you I'm conscious of it. I know how I feel and how I'm. And it's really amazing when you get that sense of your own body, when you start really listening to it, it is a different experience of living, I think.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely fantastic that you mentioned that, because when you're really connecting with your physical body, you're entering a state of coherence, it's called in science. They call it the coherence between the heart and the mind. In other words, between the body and the mind. But I feel that in a way, because we are a trinity, body, mind, and soul, or spirit, however you want to call it, it's in my view, it's kind of the same thing. Then obviously, when you are in coherence, you are whole. So you are attending all parts of you. Because you become aware of your physiological sensations in the body, you might become the observer of your thoughts, which means you operate from outside your mind, the mind that you know as functioning and helping you to think and all of the other mental processes. And when you become the observer of your mind, obviously the body can't do it. So there must be another force outside of that. And that's the energy we carry with us that is keeping us alive, that is keeping this body alive, that it's allowing these 50 trillions of cells that form our community as a body to actually, you know, self-sustain themselves, because they are self-governing. They take care of themselves. You don't tell yourselves, now is the time to regenerate yourself. Now it's the time to act this way or in another way. They are very intelligent. They know everything. You don't tell your nails to grow or your hair to grow. You don't tell your heart to beat. There is this knowing and this intelligence that we have in us, this energy that we call spirit.
It is interesting that why we age, though. I wonder why we choose to physically age. I mean, obviously, you want to get old to a certain stage. I wonder if we'll ever work out how to actually stop that physical aging process.
I know we are obsessed with that. We want to live longer.
Well, I know. I don't think anyone would mind dying at a certain point. But actually, you know, keeping the you know, all the bits in the right places would be quite nice.
Yes. I would agree with that. I can't agree with that, because I bet it's quite scary. It's a scary prospect. I feel that the more I study the Eastern traditions and I get myself out of the scientific indoctrination, not to deny it, not to reject it, to embrace it, but to also look beyond it, to stay open to what's more out there. Yeah. All of this science that we've had developing over the past 300 years, let's say, and has created all of these revolutions that we witness today, industrial, technological, and digital, and so on. If I look beyond, if I go back to the, you know, the world teachings, you see them in Buddhism 500,000 years ago. You see them in Taoism, kind of similar times. You see them in Christianism 3,300 years ago, when Moshe the Rabbein, Moses, came back with the 613 amendments and you know, created this kind of code of living, of moral living. Yeah. If you go back to Hinduism, which is kind of started kind of at the same time with the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, which is the New Testament in Christianity, they all teach the same thing: how to be wise and how to create a good life in care and love and compassion and understanding and kindness towards yourself and the other people around you, as well as the nature surrounding you, which is the Mother Earth, Gaia in Greece, or you can call it anyway, with the universe surrounding us, which has become now our, you know, focus, because we are not happy on Earth anymore.
No.
We seem to be wanting to, you know, evade the space and discover what's happening out there. Although we don't really know what's going on Earth, to be honest. There's so much to discover. None of us within a lifetime would be able to actually travel everywhere, get familiar with all cultures, all traditions. There are still tribes hidden in the Amazon and everywhere on Earth that have never been exposed to civilization, that are still, you know, cherishing those old teachings. And they all talk about the same thing. And they talk about incarnation. Now, this is a concept that I fought a lot throughout my life, because I've been up and down, embracing and rejecting different notions and concepts. But the more I think about it, if there is reincarnation and we really take this physical body as the spirit to have this human experience, so we can evolve ourselves, because without this, we wouldn't have the mind and we wouldn't have the body to experience through our senses, the five known senses and through intuition as well, and different other senses that might be there available to us, maybe we wouldn't have the chance to evolve a spirit. So if they are right, all of these teachings, all teachings, and we really go through more than one incarnation. And there are people nowadays that believe that actually every second is a new reincarnation, because you have a new life. And we live, let's say, 80 years, probably, I don't know, 700,000 days. And then we have probably in 80 years, 2.5 billion of seconds. As many incarnations that we can have. And every single one of us is an opportunity to choose a different life, to make, you know, choices that will change the way we are, who we are, to become who we want to be. I think it's not about how long we live on a physical body. I think it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. I think the most important one is, what are we doing with this existence, with this journey that we have here? It might be the only one. It might be one of the many. I don't think it matters. I'm thinking that if there is another life, and this is an opportunity for me to really evolve as this, you know, on a spiritual level and function from a better, a higher frequency where there is love and kindness and compassion and less ego, you know, less tunnel mind, maybe less hatred, less reaction, less envy and all sorts of resentment that we feel towards other people around us and systems and so on. If I have this opportunity, and this is the only life I have, I'd rather end it well. I'd rather live it well. I'd rather choose to operate from love, you know, instead of hatred. So if there is or not another incarnation for me, it doesn't matter. I'm just choosing to make the best of this existence that I have. How long it's going to be, I don't know, but I'm, you know, consistently invested in my well-being. I take care of my body. I take care of my mind. I take care of my soul. I've learned a lot of lessons through my cancer journey, plus all of the other experiences. And now I'm inspiring others, and I'm empowering others, and I'm encouraging others to, you know, get to the same openness, openness to experience, openness to happiness, openness to anything that is unfolding in front of us, because that's the only way to really grow and develop and create those lives that we dream of living.
Gosh, you say so much, and you give me very little time, and you say things, and I kind of go, I want to talk about that a bit, but then you go on with something else. So you are, it's fine. You are fantastic. It's really, it's lovely to hear the passion and explore it. So look, I need to get back to that actually. So what has been driving this journey? Because I mean, this is life, passion and business. And I have like a set standard of questions. So what has been the passion that has driven you throughout your life?
Yes, very interesting question. I love it. I think it's all about living with passion. I think for me, the passion in life is to be with people. Just hold people, contain them, inspire them if I can, empower them, encourage them as I said, and allow them a companion in this journey for them to be able to go inwards, to start their, you know, inner work, their inner journey.
That sounds like to me that was implanted by your grandmother. It's what you saw.
I think
you saw your grandmother do it, and it sounds like you have continued that tradition.
I think the same. If we are to believe that we have chosen our life, we have chosen the place we come in, the time, the family, everything, the culture, even the physicality and everything else, then I have chosen maybe my parents, to have these grandparents, to go through all of these experiences that have informed all my life path and have made me who I am today. Mm. I am embracing my life script and my personal history, considering the life script, my ancestry, everything that's been given to me, assigned to me without me asking for it before I was born. And the personal story, I consider this, everything that happened since I was born up until this very moment. And I think it's a process of unfoldment. And I think we can't ignore what happened in the past. And without doubt, my grandmother has been absolutely instrumental. And my grandfather as well. They have been the first mentors I have and the most precious memories that stay with me. The most precious teachings where they instilled in me couldn't have been destroyed by all the domestic abuse I've been exposed to in all aspects of my life throughout those years that I spent with my parents. So the foundation is very important. So you're right. Yeah, I think it's very important to have that.
So how do you measure success in your life?
To be honest with you, Paul, I used to believe that success can be measured in the physical world around us, in mm-hmm. terms of your education, titles, you know, degrees, jobs that you have, friends, money, possessions, houses, cars, and whatever we want to have.
And that is a valid measure of success. I mean, I have no issue with people measuring success as long as they're happy with that measurement.
I think it's valid to consider that, because we can't all live like monks, you know, isolated in the, you know, in on an island. We are social beings, so we function in this world, and we need to be attuned to what's going on in this world. So it's important to really take care of ourselves from a social perspective, but that's just the social perspective.
I mean, I met a guy this week who had a $1 billion company before he was 20. He has money, has been a major part of his life, and it still is. And he is very happy with that process. And it makes me wonder how he gets out of bed in the morning, but he's driven to get out of bed and still do stuff.
Yes. Well, absolutely. I mean, the financial, the material world is important in our life because it relates to our physical body. Our body needs finances. Our body needs taking care of. We need food. We need to make a living in order to get the food. And in order to get the food, we need to work so we can get the means to buy the food. So that's important. But for me, the real success beyond the physical world, if we are to consider success from the perspective of the wholeness of the human being, then that would be a balance, an equilibrium, a homeostasis, we call it, between the physical, mental, and spiritual being. In other words, you can be very wealthy, and I met millionaires that were terribly unhappy and completely lost in the world, despite all of their achievements. I've met people that were very, very healthy, you know, and they kind of had everything they wanted, and they were still not finding themselves, because you need to permit yourself to allow yourself to emerge. It's not something that you can go and say, I'm going to find myself today. Well, you may be able to find a little bit of yourself, but you're like a diamond full of shiny facets, and you need to consider every single one of them, because there is knowledge in every single facets of your being. Yeah. So I think the balance between living in peace in your soul, nurturing your mind, and giving yourself the chance to escape the tunnel mind and create that kind of being where you don't function trapped, identified completely with what's going on into your thinking, and as well taking care of the physicality so you can function healthy as long as possible. I think that would be the recipe for success, if I'm thinking of it now. I didn't think before. I just allow it to emerge naturally, because I didn't want it to be contaminated by a script.
No, it's good. It's good. So I move to my next question. My next question is contribution. How do you see yourself as contributing to the world?
Very interesting one. Because without purpose, what's our life about? I feel that I bring goodness and well-being in the world. That's my purpose. I feel that through the everything that I inspire people in their lives, I encourage them, I empower them. I think I lead them in a way towards that inner journey, which is a very frightening journey if you really want to take it. And no one is taking it on their own. We need a companion. We need someone to make us feel held and contained in that space. And I think I allowed myself first to go through this journey, held by others. And now what I'm doing is just I'm replicating that kind of knowing, and I bring it out in the air, spreading this goodness and well-being with all of the others. And I'm hoping that they will do the same with others, so we can, you know, elevate this, collective consciousness one day, and we function from love and kindness and compassion, all of us.
So how do you contribute to yourself?
To myself, through everything that I mentioned, I allow my real self to emerge. I permit myself to discover my real self, to connect with that core of my being. I permit myself to escape that tunnel mind, which is all the programming that the parents, the school, and the culture around me has placed into my brain. Because I think the mind is just a software, it's nothing else. And it's one that you can expand. That's why my modality now, it's called the expansive psychotherapy. You can expand through neuroplasticity. Now, all the studies have shown that we can actually rewire our brain. We can populate areas of our brain that haven't been wired through new ideas, through new experiences. We just create new avenues of knowledge. And they become greater and greater, and they become a new sort of map that we have available as an alternative to everything, to our own conditioning, to everything that we knew before. And I think that's very important. I allow myself for my real self to emerge. So on a spiritual level, I permitted myself to stay connected to myself, family, other people in the world, in the four relationship circles. Then I took care of my physical body the best I could, although I hurt it at some point, because the stress that came with managing mental health services and working in this kind of environment, it's not easy to take. So probably it contributed to my illness, but also my genetic mutation. I have the same genetic mutation as Angelina Jolie that is creating breast cancer and ovarian cancer. Her mom died like my mom. I was obviously diagnosed with breast cancer. And and to escape my mind. So I worked on myself on all three levels, and I connected with my wholeness. And I continue to take care of myself. I think this is the best contribution I can make to myself.
Absolutely.
And I continue to do it every day that I'm living.
That's it. We have to have a process, don't we? We have to have something. Yes. We have to have I have my days full of rituals. I have rituals throughout the day that I do for myself. And there are physical rituals and other things and mental ones. So I agree. That's really, I think it's vitally important as humans to have those things. So what's the one question you want people to ask you or ask of themselves?
I wouldn't think of a question for people to ask me. I'm open to experience. I would allow them to ask me anything they want. And I'm hoping, I would hope that I would be able to sit there with their question. And
the reason this question is in this podcast, it's a feeder question. It's the question you want people to ask you that allows you to say your piece, to say what you want to say.
Oh, that's interesting.
What do you think is that feeder question for you? When someone says to you, Nicoletta, what is the secret of, what would that question be?
How would I heal? And I think it relates to the same question that every single human being should ask themselves. Where am I at this very moment? Where do I operate from? Am I prisoner in my tunnel mind? Am I run by the default mind? Am I trapped in my thinking, which is 90% of a negative nature? Am I in awareness? Am I able to come into mindful living, to be in presence with myself? I think that's the most important question, because this is the answer to everything. If you connect with yourself, if you are in presence, attending your body, mind, and soul, then there's no problem. You don't have any issues, and there's no pain, and there's no suffering, because in the very moment, we really don't have any problem. This very second that is coming right now, it's a gift. It's a beautiful gift. It's very unlikely that it comes with pain and suffering. But when you think of the past or the aspirations and the dreams that you have for the future, and you feel like unable to fulfill them, then this is when you move, you step into the scarcity, into the suffering. And this is when, of course, not being present, you just give up yourself to the distress and the inner pain.
Yes, of course, yes. So look, what is it that you do for people, and how do they get in touch with you?
I help people and I teach people improve their lives.
Mm-hmm.
In their wholeness. And I take them through a very eye-opening journey of self-discovery, healing, and personal growth. That's the meaning of life, I feel. That's, in my view, why we're here on earth, to just learn these lessons, to discover ourselves, to heal, and to grow, so we can do the same with others. And I can be reached on my website, www.nicolettaporojano.com. Also on my mental health charity that I founded, and it's active now, The Significant You, which is committed to help people connect with their value and worth. As well on my podcast, Open to Happiness, which is empowering people to make the best of each second of their life and remain open to experience and happiness.
That's lovely. I know you're on social media at all?
I am on social media, but I must confess I'm not very active, and I'm sorry for that. But I prepare to, when I finish a little bit with the charity and I get it quite established, because we are expanding now with the volunteers and everything, and I'm setting up the low-cost counseling service. When that's done, I will be starting to be more active on social media, on my YouTube channel, on Facebook as well, and Instagram, because I have a lot to share, and I don't want to keep all of this for myself. I want to give them to the world.
So the best way to get hold of Nicoletta is to go to her website, and all those details will be at on the podcast app you're listening to this on, and also at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. So do check out Nicoletta's website, because she is an amazing lady to talk to. So Nicoletta, I think you have hinted at it already. This is our final question we ask all of our guests. What is the meaning of life for you?
The meaning of life for me is to learn the lesson that has been given to me through this life experience on earth. To be able to live from love, care, compassion, and kindness, from forgiveness and gratitude, and connect with myself, all of the other people, and the universe surrounding me. Because in connection, we find the healing, we find the joy, and we find the happiness.
That's perfect. Nicoletta, thank you so much for being with me today. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and all the best.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fantastic. It allowed me to actually organize my thoughts in a way that I haven't been able to do before, not even writing my book or doing my digital course. So thank you so much for all your questions and for this time spent together today.
Thank you. All the best.
All the best to you.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Nicoletta Portegiano. As you heard, Nicoletta and I enjoyed each other's company so much so that she invited me onto her show, The Happiness Project. And that show is launched today. Links are in the show notes. If you would like to catch up with Nicoletta, do check out her website, which is nicolettaportegiano.com. You can also find the charity, which is called thesignificantyou.org. You'll also find a link to that free download regarding the 7 steps of transformation. Those links will be available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. And while you're there, do check out the shortcast from last weekend, which was about what matters. What are the things that matter in your life? It was quite an interesting reflection about how we have all these big things that matter, but how some of the little things that matter to us just as much, and sometimes we actually don't realise they matter until they're gone. And of course, there are loads of resources on the site to support you on your ongoing journey. So that's it from me for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for being on this journey with me. And as I say every week, if you enjoy the podcast, if you're enjoying any podcast, always sort support your content creators with likes, shares and reviews, because that's what builds this ecosystem and supports people like yourself to find podcasts of interest. So thanks so much for your time and attention. I'll catch you next time. All the best.